Welcome to People, Places, Planet Pod, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to ensure a healthy environment, prosperous economies, and vibrant communities founded on the rule of law.
Welcome to this week's episode of People, Places, Planet. I'm your host, Sarah Backer. Mud Lake, written and illustrated by past National Wetlands Award winner Sam Lovell, is a collection of short adventure stories about children living in Hazlet, Michigan during the 1960s and 70s, when kids were allowed to freely explore the natural world without adult supervision. The book is an engaging testament to the beauty and importance of nature, making it a perfect read in time for Earth Day. Weaving storytelling and technical research about ecosystems and climate, Mud Lake manages to be both fun and educational for all ages. Joining me today is author Sam Lovell to discuss his book. But first, here's an excerpt from Mud Lake, read to you by Sam.
I don't know if you need any kind of introduction for this, but it is a real brief episode of one of the kids in the Mud Lake neighborhood that enjoyed an afternoon catching a box turtle. Okay, so here we go. Mark's affinity for turtle catching ranked high on his free time agenda. So he was frequently found patrolling the banks of First Creek in the company of his pals or on his own. Since most turtles seem to linger on the other side of the wire fence running along the road's east side, someone remodeled the fence mesh with an opening large enough for crawling through. With elderberries and other wetland shrubs providing camouflage, passage through the opening could happen unnoticed by passing motorists, which was pretty rare. Nevertheless, almost every fence post displayed a no trespassing sign, and no one wanted to debate why those signs did not apply to kids under 12. On the west side of the fence is where Mark spotted the most unusual turtle yet seen in the creek. Of course, sunbathing on the opposite bank, the wire fence that passed through the creek made a convenient way to cross without waiting, but due to its flimsy structure and rusty barbed wire, it took some skill to avoid falling or getting scraped by the wire. Mark proved his daring to the gang in the past by clambering across the creek while clinging to the fence, so another trip on the wire seemed like the best way to approach the turtle. At about midway, the mesh begins pulling away from the posts, turning it from vertical to near horizontal position with him on the underside. Grabbing for anything stable, the barbed wire gets in the way and Mark is swimming. Keeping minimal composure, he still manages to grab the turtle. Mark recognizes this catch to be a prize and took it home for a pet. He was excited to learn its identity from his mother as a box turtle, rare in this area. However, he was taken back by her displeasure about him being scratched up and covered with mud from head to toe. Worse yet, she didn't want him to keep the turtle. So after fruitless discussion, the pet was returned to the creek later that day under the supervision of his smiling dad. All these experiences, although difficult at the time, created lasting impressions and common lifetime memories shared by the boys and their buddies. Each one prepared them for a next situation that would require a mental or physical test. Electronic games of today are missing the bold reality of the greater Mud Lake area, a real place with real plants, wildlife, people, and pain. The educational and physical training that comes from this kind of environment, although subtle, is second to none.
Sam, thanks for being on the podcast today and for reading some of Mud Lake.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So before we dive into your book, I want to highlight your past wetland stewardship, for which you were given a National Wetlands Award. Most recently, you were the project manager for the Friends of the Detroit River and successfully completed Great Lakes Restoration Initiative projects at several locations on the Detroit River. Can you tell us about your current wetland restoration efforts?
Well, sure, Sarah, but let me first thank the Environmental Law Institute for taking interest in the book and actually publishing it. It's really been a great experience to work with their staff for the past year. Thanks to my great friends that stuck with the project, providing input and encouragement. First, there was Sue Lovell, my wife and grandmother of seven. She's also a longtime enthusiast of Mud Lake, who grew up in the area. And actually, she's the one that came up with the idea to write the book. And Becky Goodman, another Mud Lake area native, served as the downtown director for Lake Orion, Michigan for 5 years before going to the city of Petoskey to direct their downtown for another 19 years. Now she's semi-retired and is helping Harbor Springs with their downtown efforts. Oh, and she's my sister, by the way, basically in charge of my activity when we were kids, when our parents were away. And then Beth Hagenboo, a landscape architect that grew up on the edge of Mud Lake Marsh. I got to know her later professionally and admired her work involving sustainable landscapes, local food systems, and urban design. And then Mark Nymphy is a retired mechanical electrical engineer that also lived on the edge of Mud Lake's surrounding swamp. Besides being the smartest and most athletic kid when we were in high school, he went to work with GM and then later with Ford Motor Company as director of product planning. Chris Early, a state champion wrestler when at Hazlett High School near Mud Lake, became a lifelong social worker for the state of Michigan. Now retired, he lives in DeWitt, Michigan, still not too far from Mud Lake. And then Terry Sack, another Hazlett athlete, went on to play college football at Hillsdale before going into pharmaceutical sales and eventually becoming a registered nurse. And then finally, Bridget Booth, our youngest team member, teaches eighth grade science at Hazlett Middle School right next to Mud Lake. She's past president and board member of the Michigan Alliance for Environmental and Outdoor Education and now leads their Climate Education Action Team. So for me, I guess I'm mostly retired these days, but still pretty busy on a volunteer basis. Some of this includes serving on a steering committee with the Southeast Michigan Community Foundation to advance the Great Lakes Way. This is a Green Way and Blue Way initiative starting from the south end of Lake Huron to the southeast corner of Lake Erie, intended to engage the public with all the natural and historical amenities along this watery corridor. I'm also serving on a committee led by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to develop a wetlands conservation blueprint from Saginaw Bay to the western Lake Erie coast.
So tell us more about your book.
Well, sure. It's actually a little bit about everything, but primarily focuses on the importance of wetlands from both a fish and wildlife standpoint, along with emphasizing the human well-being benefits gained from all of these things and other natural landscapes, along with a few ideas that might not be in the mainstream of most everyone's thinking, like circular energy. Instead of loading the pages with a lot of dry data and facts, the book explains these ideas through storytelling, which is hopefully somewhat entertaining. A little science is weaved in, but in an easy-to-read way that anyone can understand. Based on what I've heard from people so far my age that have read it, they immediately tell me a story or a memory of how they engaged with the natural landscape when they were a kid. So I think it has a universal quality to it. Even the title, Mud Lake, resonates with most people. It might be the most common name for small lakes in Michigan. So after several short stories about how kids growing up in the 1960s engaged with Mud Lake and surrounding natural areas, which all take place in Hazlett, Michigan, it goes into all the craziness that happened during that decade. For instance, a short summary of when John Glenn orbited the moon 3 times and all of the unfortunate assassinations that happened, like with the Kennedys and Martin Luther King, the hippies and some of their music. Oh, and a meaningful segment about the Vietnam War and some important advancements that were made to improve the environment, which seemed to happen in the shadow of all this other nonsense. Another short adventure story follows this history chapter that serves as a transition into the idea of circular energy. This is that unexplainable force that makes everything happen, from the Earth revolving around the sun to the water cycle and essentially life itself. The book points out how these circles happen without emitting any waste. And because of that, they make great models for sustainability. Of course, this dialogue leads to the carbon cycle, another sustainable circle, at least until we disrupted it by flooding the atmosphere with CO2, which is essentially waste from all our transportation and building heating and cooling systems. At the same time, we began removing carbon storage areas like wetlands, forests, and prairie ecosystems. Again, this is explained in somewhat of a fun way, that makes a case for climate change as a real thing and something that will likely become a huge problem. Stories about the 60s kids continue to show up with messaging about social injustice, how things like amusement parks were thrilling but not sustainable and eventually faded away, and finally, how exploring natural areas as a youngster can build courage and intelligence to better navigate through life experiences, in addition to providing a whole set of other well-being benefits. In the end, the book nails down the reality of climate change. It offers up strategies to mitigate and adapt to it, ways to both survive as a species and ways to preserve the benefits of natural areas without totally losing them.
Can you tell us about Mud Lake, the area, and how it has changed over time?
The history of Mud Lake by itself is not really very well documented. I'm guessing this is because it's been surrounded by an expansive wetland throughout recorded history, which makes it extremely difficult to get to. It probably just chugged out your basic ecosystem services for most of its existence. I really don't know when the farm was developed on its west side, but sometime after that, in the 1950s, the new subdivisions were built north of the wetland, which exposed the lake and surrounding natural area to expeditions by kids moving into the new houses. Some of these adventures are summarized in the book. The new Hazlett High School replaced the farm property in 1972, with the lake being a bonus for organized environmental studies, and it was renamed Wildlife Lake at that time. I think it still gets some casual visitation from the neighborhood. Now, the greater Mud Lake area, basically the town of Hazlett, has a much more socially dramatic history because of nearby Lake Lansing, which is a much larger lake, and its history is described in the book to some extent as well.
You mentioned this at the top of the episode, but what inspired you to write Mud Lake?
Well, probably several things, but certainly Mud Lake and its surroundings were a special part of my childhood. Just an incredible place to explore and play with friends. It was actually my wife, Sue, who urged me to write the book after I became semi-retired. She and I ice fished there quite a bit when we were younger. I guess after working in wetland restoration for so long and all of a sudden having some extra time, it just seemed like the right thing to do.
Well, I'm glad that she encouraged you. So what do you see as the ultimate purpose of the book?
Well, most importantly, I think the book promotes all the good things wetlands and natural areas provide in a way that most anyone can identify with if they played outside as a kid. And it potentially could help deter further destruction of these areas and possibly even encourage more restoration and new green infrastructure projects. Secondly, I know there's still some resistance out there to accepting climate change as a real threat. So the book lays out the truth about it in an easy-to-understand way without being offensive. And who knows, it could potentially impact some opinions.
Your book speaks to some of the racial injustices that happened at Mud Lake. Can you tell us more about this?
Mud Lake is merely a place where social injustices happened, like most everywhere, right? The book provides a couple of brief accounts about some Asians and African Americans being discouraged from enjoying the benefits of Mud Lake. It then goes into a more intense discussion about the teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King, noting how all life is interrelated, and we are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied to a single garment of destiny. Okay, so this gets pretty deep, but the next chapter, without specifically mentioning racial injustice, offers an account of how Mud Lake is situated near Michigan's principal meridian. This was surveyed in 1815, which roughly bisects the lower peninsula and was used as a reference line for all other survey work in the state. It was chosen because it formed one of the main boundary lines that defined the Treaty of Detroit in 1807, surrounding the first large cession of Michigan territory land by Native Americans to the United States. This land transfer, defined by this imaginary line near Mud Lake, marked the beginning of a significant change. a couple decades later, the U.S. Congress passed the Indian Removal Act, which called for relocating all American Indians to lands west of Mississippi River. Now, there's a social injustice, right? Leaving the Great Lakes region open to further development by European settlers. Of course, this led to the logging era, which lasted for the rest of the century, stripping Michigan of almost all of its forests.
Thanks, Sam. You mentioned before that you hope that this book is an eye-opener for people who are not convinced of the dangers posed by human-caused climate change. So the book also includes multiple strategies that are intended to mitigate and adapt to climate change. What are the strategies that you describe in the book?
Well, based on all the information presented about climate change, the obvious answer to mitigation is we need to reduce our carbon emissions. Flooding the atmosphere with CO2 for the last 200 years while simultaneously eliminating our carbon sinks like wetlands, forests, and prairies obviously caused a disastrous imbalance in the carbon budget responsible for our changing climate. So now we just need to get back to what's called net zero emissions. This doesn't mean we have to stop expelling CO2. We just need to get back to where CO2 output can be absorbed by our carbon storage areas. How we do that will require worldwide participation in what the Paris Agreement calls a circular economy involving various sectors, including energy supply, transportation, buildings, and waste. For energy supply, we need to both minimize its use and make the switch to renewable energy sources like sun and wind, and quickly begin the tough process of limiting our use of fossil fuels, which is the main source of greenhouse gas causing all the problems. Eliminating waste in general by recycling is part of the solution, which is easy for everyone to participate in. By eliminating mining for raw materials, it decreases energy usage in the first step in the process of making new stuff. And then it's reestablishment of our lost carbon sinks. This means creating green infrastructure like wetlands, forests, and prairies in appropriate places to start managing CO2 emissions that can't be eliminated. Mechanical extraction of CO2 from the air is also discussed, along with the fragility of ocean ecosystems as we look for ways for more CO2 to be absorbed there. For adaption, we essentially need to be more mindful about future development, knowing that our coastlines will become more vulnerable to the more frequent and intense storms, which have already begun, along with higher water levels. Planning for this needs to happen now. In the end, none of the suggestions are extraordinarily great revelations. They're just what's been discussed by the scientific community for the past decade or so, again, presented with logical, easy-to-understand, documented facts. Although not specifically mentioned anywhere, the idea of managing global warming is not like managing a simple event. It's about managing a time period that will likely go on for more than a century. To be successful, it will require a cultural change related to our environment and toward social injustice.
Well, thanks, Sam, for being on the podcast today and for writing and illustrating an incredible book. I encourage all of our listeners to take the time to read it. Whether you want to read adventure stories about nature or understand ecosystems and climate change through really beautiful illustrations, there's something for everyone in Mud Lake.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm really glad to be here and looking forward to when the book gets out there.
Thank you for tuning in to People, Places, Planet Pod, brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute. We would like to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and ideas to podcast@eli.org. And if you're interested in learning more about our work, attending one of our events, reading our publications, or becoming a member, please visit our website at www.eli.org.